U.S. inflation wrapped up tight with a bow on top. From APM, this is the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich, and it is December 14th. We're going to talk about falling consumer prices and find out why the U.S. and its allies want nothing to do with a new international treaty to regulate the internet. We'll also hit on the long-lost proposal to call up a U.S. National Guard of Geeks, I guess you could call it. And we'll get the story behind what I think is one of the best company names I've ever heard, Jupon.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
Turns out holiday shoppers have been getting a little gift of their own this season, even if they don't know it. Consumer prices dropped 0.3% in November. So inflation appears to be well under control. That's also a nice holiday present for the Federal Reserve, as Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains.
Just 2 days ago, the Fed announced that it's going to continue trying to stimulate the sleepy economy, pumping in money by buying treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. Some economists worry the Fed could spark not just economic growth, but inflation. But today's numbers show inflation isn't becoming a problem. Gas prices alone fell more than 7%. That's the biggest drop in almost 4 years. Consumer prices actually fell more than many economists expected, including Michelle Girard, senior U.S. economist at the Royal Bank of Scotland. Girard says this morning's numbers just strengthened the Fed's hand.
Inflation is right in line with the level the Fed would like to see it. And that, I think, gives the Fed room to concentrate more on the employment situation and actually getting the unemployment rate down.
The Fed said Wednesday that it's going to keep interest rates low until unemployment falls to at least 6.5%, as long as the inflation rate stays below 2.5%. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Well, markets have been down so far on Wall Street. At this hour, the Dow is down just a touch. The S&P is down about 0.2%, and the NASDAQ is off about 0.4%. So what's going on with the NASDAQ? Well, part of that undoubtedly is Apple. Those shares are down at this hour, about 3.5%. The company launched the iPhone 5 today in China, and the early word on demand is not so good. Shares are down for Apple and for other tech companies that supply it. The Swiss bank UBS is reportedly headed for a $1 billion settlement over allegations it rigged the key global interest rate called LIBOR. That fine is double what Barclays Bank paid over the summer to settle similar allegations. In terms of data, U.S. manufacturing output expanded in November by more than 1%. That's a sturdy recovery from the previous month and from Superstorm Sandy. It was the first month since July that auto production increased. Today's a big deadline for the Environmental Protection Agency. The EPA has been ordered to finalize controversial new air quality standards that have been fought over for more than a decade. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, here's Eve Tro.
Oil, coal, and other industries lobbied hard to delay stricter rules on fine particulate matter, also known as soot. Now the rules are happening, and there will be cost to industry to filter pollution. As for the argument that will kill jobs,
people can't work if they're dead. They can't work if they're having heart attacks.
American Lung Association Vice President Janice Nolan. She says the rules will reduce illness from pollution and thus reduce health care costs. John Graham at Indiana University's School of Public and Environmental Affairs says it's not great timing with the economy in recovery.
It's going to make companies a little bit more reluctant to build new plants or to expand them.
But maybe the rules won't improve health as much as expected or cost companies as much as they thought, says MIT economist Michael Greenstone.
When regulations get set, you know, it's at the absolute moment that we know the least about them.
He says the Obama administration is trying to change how it weighs health benefits against industry costs. It wants the EPA, for the first time, to go back and see if the standards produce the expected results. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
It is an international internet showdown. The U.S. and other Western countries have rejected a new U.N. treaty on oversight of the internet. The U.S. has long taken the perspective of major tech players like Google that internet regulation needs a light touch, if any. Evidently, much of the world does not agree. The BBC's technology correspondent Mark Gregory has been covering these talks. Hello, Mark.
Hello there.
This was a conference of the United Nations International Telecommunications Union. What was it supposed to achieve?
Well, the ITU deals with all sorts of apparently kind of boring things, the kind of nuts and bolts of modern communications. And the last time you had an update of the international treaty governing these things was way back in the 1980s, before the internet became a major force. And the meeting was attended essentially by huge tensions between different nations about whether there should be UN regulation or indeed government regulation of the internet.
In the end, why wouldn't the U.S., most of Europe, Australia, Canada sign on to the treaty that came out of this conference?
Well, a lot of the discussions, of course, were about fairly obscure technical things. But underlying it was a kind of belief by the Western nations, led by the United States, that the internet has done pretty well unregulated. It should be left alone, and that getting UN bodies like this one involved could lead to meddling. It could actually make things worse from a commercial point of view. And also that if you got the forms of wording wrong, that repressive regimes could actually use these regulations to do things like increase their censorship of the internet or to delay the development of the internet in their countries.
So what's the argument of the many countries that do back the treaty as written?
Well, a big group of mostly developing countries, led by Russia and China, but also including Saudi Arabia, they see the issues in a very different way. They say, OK, so the internet hasn't been regulated, but because of the way it's grown up historically, it's kind of dominated by the United States and the West. That's where the sources of power are. And they say that they have a legitimate, if you like, request that they should have more say over something that's increasingly important and increasingly affects their citizens.
The BBC's Mark Gregory with me from London. Thank you so much.
Great.
You know, maybe our world leaders should stop bickering over regulating the internet and start worrying about the big problems. Fortunately, somebody is on the case. It's been almost 14 years since the blockbuster film The Matrix came out, but researchers are finally getting serious about seeing if The Matrix is real. Separate research projects are evidently underway at Cornell and the University of Washington to test if, in fact, we are all simply living in an elaborate computer simulation. So, when they tell you the awful truth, will you take the red pill or the blue pill? Anyway, their conclusions are still some ways off, so just try to enjoy the holidays in the meantime.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
At sundown tonight, Jews will light candles for the seventh night of Hanukkah. They may also have received a holiday-themed daily deal offer by email from a site like JDeal or, get ready for it, Jupon. A growing number of sites like this target a specific ethnic market. From our entrepreneurship desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman has our story.
We have an Uzbeki-style kosher restaurant in Midtown.
Jody Samuels is co-founder of JDeal, based in Manhattan.
For Hanukkah, we ran this Hanukkah house, which was a Manischewitz product, like the equivalent of making a gingerbread house. Food deals always sell in the Jewish world.
JDeal launched in 2010, when it seemed daily deal doers were the next dot-coms. They weren't. Many have struggled. Meanwhile, targeted deal sites keep cropping up for multicultural women, vegans, and Jews.
When you first hear it, it might sound like it's too niche.
Set your ethnic niche too narrow, says Riva Lozansky of SmallBizDaily.com, and customers can feel ghettoized.
I mean, Jews shop at Macy's, it's not like. But it's a really good mixture. There's a lot of charity and that kind of thing in there, so I think it might work.
I test marketed JDeal on two other Jewish analyst types. Stacy Widlitz runs SW Retail Advisors.
When your religious affiliation, you know, mandates that you use certain kind of products, it is a time saver.
And here's retail analyst Marshall Cohen of the NPD Group.
You know, there's a stigma that the Jewish population love to get a good deal. Well, that comes from them being merchants through history, and that also presents an opportunity to look at them to offer a good deal.
It takes chutzpah to say that out loud. Jody Samuels mixes a little chutzpah, a little kitsch on JDeal.
We definitely try and have some Jewish humor in our site, Jewish mother-in-law, Jewish guilt.
This isn't just for Jewish traditionalists. My teenage son doesn't know a Torah from a Talmud, but he loves the Maccabees, yeshiva boys who mash up top 40 tunes on YouTube.
I'll tell a tale, 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 yeah, of Maccabees in Israel,
J-Deal offered half-price tickets to their show in New York. Maybe not such a great deal, because in Portland, Oregon, I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Next week, Congress takes up a $60 billion recovery package for areas affected by Superstorm Sandy. When the lights went out and the floodwaters moved in, people needed food and sandbags, sure, but they also needed information and connectivity. Volunteers with laptops and technical skills were also fixtures of the Fukushima nuclear disaster and the Haiti earthquake. Sandy's renewed calls to mobilize something called the U.S. National Emergency Technology Guard. One of its original sponsors is Oregon's Democratic Senator Ron Wyden. Welcome back to Marketplace.
Thanks for having me on again.
This idea was approved overwhelmingly by Congress some 10 years ago, right? But aside from a few small pilot programs, it barely exists today. What's the problem as you see it?
The central problem is that really on a bipartisan basis, the executive branch has dawdled. I mean, everyone says, oh, this is interesting. We like it. We'll have to look at it sometime down the road. But the reality is it still hasn't gotten done. And the bottom line is it would be one thing if people were talking about sending government paychecks to people to do this work, and certainly in a tough financial climate, that would be one thing. This is a question of having citizens volunteer. And it just seems a shame for the government to not have the common sense to want to use this tremendous treasure trove of talent that we have amongst IT-savvy people.
What did you see with Hurricane Sandy that inspired you to start agitating for this again?
Well, you saw once again this big gap between the need and the government's ability to get the help that was so necessary to the people. I mean, just people couldn't figure out where to turn. In the storm's aftermath, they couldn't figure out where to go to get gasoline. They weren't aware of where sites were for local and federal assistance. And it just doesn't have to be that way.
Private efforts have, to some extent, inspired your whole idea here. So why get the government involved at all?
Well, first of all, let's talk about how modest a role this is for government. You know, government's role would essentially be to vet the people, to train them, to, in effect, have a registry so that they're people you could call. I mean, the government is not stepping in and creating this brand new, you know, federal agency with a big building. And the point here is to have just enough government to make sure that you coordinate the exceptional work these professional IT volunteers are doing. That's the role of government here.
Senator Ron Wyden is a Democrat from Oregon talking about the idea for a National Emergency Technology Guard. Thanks very much.
Let's do it again soon.
Well, the government is mobilizing its best technical minds to take on one challenge in the days ahead. The North American Aerospace Defense Command will resume its annual duties tracking the progress of Santa's sleigh. This year, NORAD had a special gift for Microsoft. After 5 years of using Google Maps, in 2012, the highly sophisticated military surveillance operation will be conducted using Bing. And that does it for today's and for this week's, frankly, Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.